And 51551 is our text number. People responding to what they heard on Friday. I have Lisa on the line and I have Mary on the line. Mary, good afternoon.
Hello, Joe.
How are you?
Good, thanks.
Okay. What's your situation, Mary? You say you don't know what you're going to do.
Joe, my husband died by suicide. Mm-hmm. And we had a substantial mortgage, we have, and we had no insurance cover. Mm-hmm. And I'm left now with a huge mortgage that I cannot pay. And there was a moratorium on my mortgage for a year. That has now expired. But since that, the banks have been ringing me and they actually came to the house. Mm-hmm. And they're sending letters. They're even sending letters in my husband's name.
And I presume, do they know your husband is dead?
Yes, they do. I wrote a long letter to them shortly after my husband dying and explained the situation to them. But the letters continuously come in here in his name.
And you say you'd no insurance cover, Mary?
No, my husband was in business since 1984. Mm-hmm. And we'll say going back to 2005, 2006, he lost a number of contracts. So the money was less and less coming in.
Okay.
So we had to decide then, Joe, whether we'd pay our mortgage or our life cover. So stupidly enough, we cancelled our insurance policies. And that left us without any cover when he died.
And how was his business when he died?
It had got very quiet. Yeah. Very quiet. His business actually went into liquidation a couple of months before his death.
Now, the mortgage would have an insurance policy on it, would it not?
No, Joe. You see, this is what people can't understand. Mm-hmm. When we took out our mortgage, we did. You have to take out an insurance policy.
Yeah.
And then as the years went by, the few years went by, as I said, there was less and less money coming in and we couldn't afford to keep paying our insurance policies and our mortgage. So we cancelled the insurance policies in 2010. My husband died in September 2011.
And do you think his death was linked to the failing business? That
Joe, I don't know. Mm. He was sick for 9 years. Mm. And we moved down to the west of Ireland because his family are down here and the children thought... if we move down, it might make Dad better. And I suppose we thought he would leave his depression after him, but that wasn't the way. And we're only here 6 or 7 years.
So on the financial end, Mary, what was left afterwards is the mortgage on your house, which is obviously in the hundreds, is it at this stage?
It's
hundreds of thousands?
Over 300,000.
Okay. Are you in? You're in arrears?
Yes, I'm in arrears of about 30,000 or 40,000. I cannot pay it. I will never be in a position to pay it. I'm on a widow's pension now, Joe. Yeah. I have children and finding it very hard to survive. Only for St. Vincent de Paul, I don't know where I'd be.
And in terms of other, if there was no house, no life insurance, in terms of was there credit card bills, was there other loans outstanding?
Yes, there's a car as well that I can't keep up the repayments and the same bank are threatening to take the car. And I live about 2 miles outside town.
And your income at the moment, Mary, is what?
223 euros,
Joe. The widow's pension.
Yeah, and I just can't. I find it very difficult to survive on that. And we were a very comfortable family before my husband's death. And not in my wildest dreams did I ever think I'd end up like this.
And Ben Dunn mentioned, among other things, on Friday, this whole thing of that debt, financial debt, comes to bed with you. You lie awake at night, you wake up, and other people echo that as well. How does all of this debt affect your day-to-day life, Mary?
Oh, as you're right, Joe, I do. It's there the minute I put my feet out in the morning. It's the house. How long more will we have it? Are they going to put us out on the street? How am I where will I find money for food Wednesday and Thursday? That's my situation, Joe.
Is the house up for sale?
The house is up for sale, Joe. I did have a senior executive from the bank come down to the house, and he was here with my accountant some months ago, and I thought the conversation was based around the house itself and the location. It is a substantial property, mm-hmm. and it is in a very good location. I don't think he was in any way interested in me and my children or where we were going to end up. And he rang, that same executive rang me last October and said, hello, how are you, how are things? Any luck with selling the house? And I said, no, I haven't. And he said, well, I'll tell you what we'll do. We will come in there, which is what is called an assisted sale, whereby the bank will come in and arrange the viewings and sell your house. And I said, well, that's all very well, okay. Mm-hmm. I said, but what happens me and my children? And he said, did you ever hear of Citizens Advice Bureau? Mm-hmm. He said, they will house you to go to them.
And in terms, Mary, you're giving me this picture of a nice house, obviously a home primarily, but in terms of the property itself, and you say the bank were only interested in, and you gave me the impression they would find the property in terms of a sale attractive. It's a big house, is it?
It's a substantial property. Okay. Yes, it is, in a very good location.
Okay.
And we're down the country, in the west of Ireland. But it's our home, and it is where my husband was with us, and we had very happy memory. We have very happy memories here. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to lose my home, obviously, and I'm afraid it will affect my children as well.
Yeah. And when you look back at the height of the boom, as they called it, and where you are now, like, what was it? You were able to think of a big house like the one you're in now, you say. What was your lifestyle like at the height of the boom compared to now?
Well, my husband didn't gain anything from, we'd say, the boom years, but he always had plenty of work. He was in business from 1984, and we had a comfortable life, Joe. We were able to pay our mortgage and had a nice car, and we had the odd holiday, and, you know, the children went to university, and we paid for everything. We got nothing free.
Yeah.
We paid for every step of their education, and I still have another child to be educated. And how I'm going to do that, I don't know, but I'll have to do it. And we didn't live a lavish lifestyle or anything like that. We had, as I said, the odd holiday, and maybe went out one night a week or one night a fortnight, and that was it.
But you saw your life, looking back at it now, as being comfortable.
Very
and,
comfortable.
And now you're dependent partly on the St. Vincent de Paul.
Joe, if not for St. Vincent de Paul helping me, we would be hungry on a Wednesday and Thursday. That's the truth. They are brilliant. Absolutely brilliant.
Stay with us, Mary. 51551. Lisa is on the line as well, as I said. Lisa, good afternoon.
Hello, how are things?
And you're listening to, and you can hear Mary on the other line. But Lisa, what's your situation and your reaction to what Ben Dunn offered, the idea he was offering on Friday? What is your own situation, Lisa?
My own situation is we bought a house 5 years ago, and we were both working, we had good jobs. Uh-huh. And then my husband actually became ill. We rang the bank to say that we wouldn't be able to keep up with the payments. We gave him warnings. They told us to wait till it happens and then get in contact with them again. So 5 months later, it did. We couldn't meet the mortgage repayments. And they told us to contact MABS. So we came up with an agreement and couldn't keep the agreement because obviously my husband wasn't working and we were stuck for money. So, you know, things kept coming up, different things that we couldn't pay for, and we were robbing Paul to pay Peter and stuff like that. So 2009, I lost my own job, and we were both on social welfare, that we'd never been on social welfare in our lives. And then we just kept getting deeper and deeper into debt, deeper into arrears. And then we contacted the bank again. They said, keep going to MABS. So we did that again and again. We couldn't keep up with the payments because different things kept popping up. we contacted the HSC to see could we go on the mortgage interest supplement. We were denied 4 times. We ordered an oral hearing. We were denied because we had too much arrears at that stage. So there was no one to help us. We rented out our house. Tenants never paid. We came back to the house. So we had to sit down in 2010 and go, right, what are we going to do? Mm-hmm. So Gary, my husband, went back to college. I retrained. We got planning permission, and but with no planning permission to open up a high school for myself.
Okay.
And my husband's still in college. He's another year to go. And we just don't have the money to set up the high school, and the house is 50 grand in arrears.
How much did you buy the, much was the mortgage?
We got 100% mortgage. It for 285.
How much is the house worth now?
With the planning permission, 130. Without that, it would be less than 100.
Because you have planning permission for a Montessori.
Yeah.
And your arrears are 50 grand.
Yeah.
And you can't afford anything else.
Nothing. We're both on social welfare. Well, my husband's gone back to education allowance and I'm on social welfare.
Children?
And with no children, we were going through fertility treatment. And then 3 years ago, we had to just drop it because we just couldn't afford it. And so it really appeals to us what Ben Dunn was saying, because this gave us a bit of hope because no one else seems to be interested. And we can't get anything off HSC. We're not entitled to anything else with social welfare. You know, it just seems like our married life. We were only married 5 years. I'm only 30. My husband's only 28. We've gone to marriage counselling, not to separate, but just to learn how to cope with how things were going.
What is the stress on a relationship, Lisa, of the worry, the constant worry about debt?
Well, the same as what Mary is saying. It's just waking up every day and kind of going, do we have the home for today? Are the bank going to ring us today? Do we get a letter today? Are they going to tell us when to move out? Are the neighbours going to see? Not even for the house. My husband got me a car when we got married, and that was repossessed. You know, the embarrassment of that. And then at the end of the day, when we're listening on Friday, we're like, it's only a bricks and water, it's only a car, who cares? Our pride is now gone, we've tried everything. We've done CE schemes, we've upskilled, we've done everything we could. So, the next step, I think, for us definitely is going to the UK and declaring bankruptcy. It really appealed us, and we actually had such a lovely weekend, and going, right, that's it, that's what we're going to do. Our hands are up, we give up. We're going.
That's what you were talking about the weekend?
Yeah.
And you say that gave you a sense of relief?
Oh, the biggest relief. Like I said, we went through counselling just to learn how to cope with all the pressures that are on us. Because we're only married 5 years, it was straight away, 5 months into the marriage, we were struggling. We had no kind of happy life together, it's been a hard life, a difficult, hard time together. Every weekend, my husband comes home. He lives down in Limerick, Monday to Friday. And he comes home, and I have the bills, and I'm like, right, what are we paying this week? Like, we don't go out. We don't have a social life. We do everything that we can just to pay off things. We don't have any money left over for anything. You know, we've gone to the bank this year, this January. We told them, we gave them our financial statements. We've talked to him and said, look, this is our plans. We have plan information. My husband's becoming a teacher. This is what we're heading towards. But even at that, when we do finally get the place up and running, he does get a job, fingers crossed, as a teacher, we still be paying this huge debt till we're dead, whether we have children or not. And that's not a life I want.
Mary Lisa mentioned the shame there, the car being repossessed. Would your neighbours know of the difficulty you're living in?
I'm not ashamed, Joe, of what happened in our family. My husband suffered from depression for 9 years. I'm not ashamed of it. Would my neighbours know? Probably some of them would. My good friends know all about it. My family down in Tipperary know about it. But as regards my neighbours, I don't know. But I'm not ashamed of it in any way.
What I'm thinking is if they see your house, I don't know how it compares with other houses in the locality, but they presume that you were still fairly comfortable.
Yes. If you pulled up outside my house today, Joe, you would say, yeah. Yes, you would say, there's money there. But come inside my front door and you'll soon find different.
The reality is so different.
Yes, Joe.
Stay with us, Mary and Lisa. 51551. Brendan is in the UK. Brendan, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
Your situation, Brendan.
Yeah, owned property. Well, still own a property in Dundalk. It's approximately 100,000 in negative equity. Before I moved over here, we were making interest-only repayments for about 8 months because myself and my wife were out of work. We then started looking for jobs in the area, none to be seen. So we both applied for jobs in England, got them. So we tried to lease our mortgage to the council on a 20-year lease. The mortgage company refused that. We asked the council, had they seen that before? And they said, no, it's a standard contract. The bank weren't budging. So we then decided, okay, well, we have to do something else. So we rented it. That rent is supplementing the mortgage by, we're probably a shortfall of about 200 euro a month.
Okay.
Now that we've moved to the UK, we changed our correspondence address. They said, oh, that's now an investment property, which will mean we will more than likely lose TRS credit, which is another 200 euro a month. So, to be honest, we just can't afford it. It's good money after bad.
When you say you were interested in the council renting your house on a long lease, isn't that
yeah.
it? Which a number of people do. Your guaranteed income. Why would the bank be against that?
It was a part in the lease agreement that they didn't like the look of, and we went back to the council and seen would they amend it to suit the bank's view. They said no, because it's a standard contract. Nobody else, no other bank has refused this so far, and they didn't know why ours did. So that's where that finished up.
How are you getting on in the UK?
Getting on fantastic. Got married in November. We bought a house over here in October. We were living with my wife's family for the first 18 months, which helped us get on our feet. The job's really good. The lifestyle is good, but obviously miss friends and family. But it's, we can't go home. Our 100,000 negative equity, that's never coming back. You know, like I could be paying this back till I'm 100 and it'd still not be paid back.
Well, does the idea of going through the process of declaring yourself bankrupt in the UK appeal to you?
Well, declaring myself bankrupt in the UK is a non-runner because I'm living and working here. But certainly getting bankrupt in Ireland is something I'm now going to look into. I didn't know about the show on Friday. My mum was listening and she told me about it. So I listened to your podcast and I've been getting angry listening to it. The amount of people in Ireland who've gone through the mill trying their very best to pay back the money that they owe, and the banks aren't budging. So I think a lot of people are seeing sense, and thanks to Ben Dunn for maybe highlighting that, and hopefully people will get a resolution. And the mental illness, another of your callers mentioned, is a huge burden on people, and that's not right. There's the human factor as well as the financial factor. And I just think that it's high time that the people voted with their feet and got out. And then when the time is right, come home and start again.
And do you see yourself coming back, Brendan?
Probably not. I mean, the lifestyle I have here in Oxfordshire is very good. And the job is good. I still the odd time look back in Ireland for what jobs are about. And there's still none in my field. I'm an electrician and my wife's a solicitor. And just there just isn't anything there. And I just don't see it happening.
Mary, I know you're very keen. Say with us, Brendan. I know you're very keen, Mary, to thank Pieta House who helped you subsequently and helped so many people. When you say your husband's business folded about 8 weeks before he died by suicide, but did he give any indication that he had become seriously unwell after that, or was it just a?
Yes, he did, Joe. He became very withdrawn the weeks following that, and he did attend the doctor here in town, and he was on medication. Mm-hmm. But then he would get up and he'd go to work and things would be all right for a couple of weeks, and then he'd go back into the depths of depression again. But I didn't know about Pieta House before my husband's death. I just did some voluntary work for them, some out at a car boot sale, and I was introduced to the people from Pieta House. And I found them very nice. And I would advise people out there, anyone that's suffering from depression, to go to Pieta House. They're wonderful.
And was there any, the point that Ben Dunn and indeed Pieta House would make, I think, is that you must take care of your mental, you must be cognizant. Everyone tries to take care of their mental health.
Yes.
But you need to remind yourself on a regular basis, there are more important things than money and this debt. Was your husband open to those discussions?
He was, Joe, and I sat with him at this table. I cried with him. I laughed with him. I cried for him. Joe, but unfortunately I wasn't expecting him, or we didn't expect anything like this to happen.
Yeah.
And he did say once or twice to me that, he said to me, I have you mithered. And I said to him, look, everything will be okay and we get through it and all that. And it was a Monday it happened, so today is Monday and it's not a very good day for me, and the children are very affected as well by this.
I can understand.
And I know now, Joe, as well, that the children are out of their feet and worrying about me as well. Mm. What's going to happen to our home, and is their mum going to be thrown out of the house, or what's going to happen?
And when he would say to you, I have you mitred, Mary, was he saying, I have you mitred because I'm worried all the time about the debt?
No, I don't think. I think he was just thinking on, the way maybe I was feeling, maybe so stressed out with depression, and living with depression is not easy either. And I did take him everywhere to psychiatrists, psychologists. He was hospitalised twice here in this town, and he was on medication. But I don't have the answers, Joe.
Yeah.
I don't.
Okay. Is there a for sale sign in your garden, Mary?
No.
Is the house, with the banker pushing you to sell it?
They are. Yeah. They said what they'll do is, the senior executive rang me, as I said, and he said what they'll do is an assisted sale, whereby they'll come in and put up their signs and they'll organise viewings.
But you don't want to see that.
No, I don't, Joe, no. Okay. I want my home, Joe.
Yeah. Lisa, in terms of your future, your immediate future now, Lisa, after your weekend discussion with your husband, what do you think is the next step?
Well, my husband has one more year left in college, and I think the minute he finished, we're over in the UK for definite.
Okay, thanks indeed, Mary. You've accessed help through the St. Vincent de Paul, and I hope you can access and the wonderful Pieta House, both organisations, and I know you will access other assistance as well, which is there. But thank you indeed, Mary and
thank
Lisa.
You, Joe.
Thank you, Mary.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And thank you. Bye-bye, Lisa. And bye-bye, Brendan. 51551.
Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815.
And 51551 is our text number. Anne, good afternoon. Anne is in Cork.
Hello there.
Go ahead, Anne.
Joe, we lost our businesses about 5 years ago, and both myself and my husband. So we decided that we would try and pay our mortgage as best we could, and we did, and we were in negotiations with them all along and kept up our payments as best we could. But they went from full payment of 2,300 down to 1,800, down to 1,500, and eventually they agreed a figure with us that we could manage, and we did. And we then, in September of last year, they decided they would repossess, that they did an audit on us and said, no, we can't go with you any further. And we were intent on going for insolvency. We felt it was our only hope, and it's what kept us going. And we were fearful that the government wouldn't go ahead with the bill. But then when we kept researching it and finding out as much as we could, and we were reassured that they would. And then when we heard it was coming out, we were thrilled. And We then realised when we looked into it further that not everybody was going to get it. It wasn't a free-for-all, yeah. And you had to have your homework done to get it, and it wasn't just going to be a handover of all this money and you were staying in your house, and it wasn't going to be like that at all. So we were quite concerned in January then that we wouldn't get it. So my husband, through research, downloaded this booklet by Paul Carroll. It's a 200-page booklet. And we read it from start to finish about three times, and we felt then there was nothing we didn't know about insolvency. So then we thought, right, this is going to cost a fortune. We have to pay to become insolvent.
So your business went under, your husband's business, two businesses went under.
Both went together within 6 months of each other, yes.
And were they totally separate businesses?
Totally separate,
oh, right,
yes.
Oh, okay. Yes. And have you a debt on your house as well?
Yes, we have it. No, we don't have. Unfortunately, we remortgaged for my business, which went very quickly. We got very little off the Celtic Tiger, so we had no insulation as such, apart from what my husband had salvaged from his own setup. And we knew after a couple of years,
who do you owe money to the bank?
Yes,
and they
want to repossess.
And is that a significant amount?
Well, the arrears are. The arrears have gone up. You see, Joe, when arrears go up after 4 or 5 years, the bank then, you see, unfortunately, had we a mortgage, say, of 200, and we would be good candidates for insolvency.
Okay.
But because our mortgage has gone up and up and up, and the arrears have gone up and up and up, that's all part of your insolvency deal.
So one of the arguments Ben Dunn put forward for the UK option was speed. 15 months effectively. Here, it'll be when the legislation comes in, it'll be 3 years. But then after three years, when you are declared insolvent,
yes,
the bank will still be able to pursue you for money for 5 years thereafter.
Well, it depends on your initial deal with the bank. I mean, the insolvency expert will be pushing for 3 years. We mightn't get 3 years, it might be 5 years. But then they have to park the loan. And after that, then they won't come after you for that. I mean, if I have a choice, like Paul Carroll said to me, look, Helen, you have two choices here. If you want to go and uproot your family and go to Northern Ireland,
yep,
you're looking at 3,000 to 5,000 to get up and go,
mm-hmm,
okay?
Yeah.
And to take your children out of your school,
yeah,
to go and...
Do all that.
And then uproot your family from the community, the trauma and depression and anxiety then that goes with all of that. Or do you want to sit still and live the way you have been living very frugally for the last 5 years, for another 5 years, and come out the other end with your mortgage, being able to pay it, and then being able to own your house? Now, I think that's a no choice situation.
Okay,
of course, I'm going to stay.
So you're staying. Okay, stay there.
But we have to stay, Joe, and a couple of hundred thousand people. I don't think they dream of going to Northern Ireland. But the difference is, you have to get an insolvency expert to help you. We realised we couldn't do it alone. And once we downloaded that booklet, we felt there was light at the end of the tunnel.
But Anne, you know, you're going to be able to Google this afternoon, I suspect, because I think it happened even on Friday, insolvency experts in the UK, be it Newry or be it Newcastle, who will offer their services. You know that. They are available. They are, and they're becoming more and more because they see the constituency that's here. But your option is you're staying and you're going to take the longer route. It's not as long, hopefully the legislation comes through, but it's not as long as it used to be, but you are prepared to take the longer route because of your children, effectively.
Well, because we've lived like this for 5 years anyway, and
we feel used to it,
we're used to it, and we can still have a nice quality of life, and we feel we've come out the other end. The fear is now gone.
And generally, what business were you in?
I was in retail.
And what was your husband's business?
He was in, it was building work he was in, you know.
So he was a builder and you were running a shop.
Yes, and lovely lifestyle and all that goes with it.
And the two of them went under.
Two of them went under, but I just want to say to people not to be so scared of all this. You don't have to uproot your family and go to Northern Ireland.
The other
big elephant in the room is insolvency experts cost money, and you have to take that on board. And I refuse to take help from anybody for the last 5 years, but I would beg, borrow or steal to pay for it. It's about 3,000. It's not a huge amount of money if it's going to save your home.
It's only when you
go to one of these people, Joe, that you realise there is proper help out there, and they will do all the work for you, and they will fight these banks, and they're very competent if you find the right person, like we did.
Stay with us, Anne. Tom is online. Tom, good afternoon. You say playing nice with the banks has got me nowhere.
Well, good afternoon, Joe. Yeah. Well, being up front and doing everything the politicians have told us to do, telling them what your income is, telling them what you can afford to do, and throwing yourself at their mercy really hasn't done anything because, as I said to your researcher earlier, I was made unemployed around 2009, mm-hmm. and I straight away went into the bank when there still was the facility in my bank to go in and talk to the manager, explain my situation. He very kindly took the notes, took everything on board, and it ran smoothly for a little while. And then all of a sudden, everything got centralized into their central HQ, and you get to deal with computers and telephones and press number one to get so-and-so, press number two to get so-and-so. And all of a sudden, you're chasing them to do the right thing. And then when their systems don't work, you're left fighting month after month. In my own situation, we had a deal that was supposed to run for 12 months. Their computer system crashed. I won't leave you to guess who they were. And then suddenly they started taking the full mortgage out again, which left us in the position of all the other bills that we had the money set aside for not being paid. And, you know, we're the bad guys.
Well, did you point out to them that you had an agreement?
Well, absolutely. Pointed out, wrote letters, made telephone calls, fixed it the following month. But then the following month after that, same issue arose again. You know, money came out of the bank, the full mortgage came out. And you're sitting there scratching your head thinking, you know, how many times is this going to happen? At one stage, I said to my wife, look, you know, the best thing to do is contact the financial ombudsman. But, you know, and she quite rightly pointed out, we have to do business with these guys. We start antagonizing them, then they're going to play hardball and we're going to get nowhere.
And you came back from the UK, say, with your family at the height of the boom. You got a 300,000 mortgage. You were given one, so to speak. And you added your savings. But then your job went in 2009.
Joe, I could have got a €600,000 mortgage at the time, but we said no. We had plans. We built our own house.
How do you know you could have got a €600,000?
Because we had to go to several banks to get the mortgage that we wanted. Because banks kept saying, "Look, you know, don't put your own money in. Borrow the whole amount. We will give you 120%. You've got a good job. You've got good prospects. You've got the financial backing. You know, why put your own money in? Just take out the full mortgage." We now, it turns out, quite rightly said, well, look, no, hang on a second. We're both pushing towards our 40s at that at that point. We want to be clear of the mortgage in a reasonable time. We want to borrow what we need. That's it. We put our own money into the house and we go from there. So, you know, at the time we were advised, look, borrow the maximum you can, 120% mortgage. You know, you might as well furnish the house and do everything you can do at that point, and then sure, you'll be sitting pretty. There's no problem. You know, as I said to your researcher, when we went forward with the plans, the architect's plans into the bank, they value the house at €780,000. The house isn't worth €200,000 now, and yet I still have a mortgage of €300,000, thereabouts. And you know, I could be in the worst position, but, you know, I'm still in a bad position.
And the mental stress that people are talking about, Tom?
Well, I've been there. I always thought I had good self-reliance. I always saw myself as happy-go-lucky. But, you know, I've joined the Pill Poppers Brigade. I am now a happy member of the Prozac group. And not that I want to be here. It's because I became a person that I didn't even like. You know, I'll give you, for example, I was thinking about this for the last hour or so. My youngest son's Holy Communion was in May of last year. Right. I remember very little of the day, but I did not enjoy that day one little bit. This is before I started receiving treatment. I was the bear in the corner. Nobody could come near me. I won't say I ruined his day, but I certainly ruined my wife's day. All because of, you know, trying to keep the bank happy, trying to figure out how I could move forward, how I could fix this problem, how I could provide food for the family, shoes on their feet. You know, it got to the stage where I was hell to live with. I was even hell for me to live with.
And how have you diluted that?
Well, I got kicked into touch. My wife issued me with an ultimatum. I have a very good GP who sat me down and said, look, you're going to have to start accepting that you can't do everything and that you need treatment. Yeah. And part of that treatment is to take the tablet for as long as you need it. But you also need counselling. You need to go and talk to somebody. You need to figure out what it is that's doing this to you, because you are not... Even my GP said to me, I wasn't the man she had met 5 or 6 years beforehand. I had sunk to a stage where I put a lot of weight on. I became withdrawn. I took myself out of other people's company. And morning, noon and night was thinking about what a failure I was, because I wasn't able to provide my family with the basic means to live. Now, I still feel like that, but with the help of counsellors and friends, I've come out to realise that I'm not the only one, but that I can't take all this on board myself. And you know what? Your show on Friday, listening to Ben Dunn, whilst I didn't agree with everything he had to say, was the first time I've heard anything remotely positive from somebody in authority in this country in 3 years. And all thanks to you.
Well, all thanks to Ben Dunn. But in terms of what, trying to face up to the financial element of it, trying to puff out your chest a bit once more and say, hang on a minute, I can't be steamrolled like this, which is what Ben Dunn was saying, among other things. Don't let the bank steamroll you, is what he was saying.
Well, he's right in many ways. They're making as many mistakes as we are. I mean, I had to realise they lent me the money and remember that they wanted to lend me more money. So, you know, I can't turn around and say I had a huge party on the proceeds of the Celtic Tiger. I made the mistake of, as my brother-in-law once said to me, maybe I built a house that was too big. Okay, you know, maybe I did. But I built it.
And you are where you are.
I am where I am. You know, and it's a slow process regaining some pride, and that's what's lost here. Pride is a huge amount of pride in your ability to be able to carry on. And once the pride is gone, then a whole lot of other things go.
Okay, let me go to Jerry. Jerry O'Connor's in Dublin 16. Jerry, you listening to Mary and...
I just want to say to Mary that not to let the banks have an assisted sale.
Why not?
Because my belief that they'll sell it for any price at all. And I'll tell you the reason. I had a premises worth $700,000 in 2008.
Yeah.
And I owed about $270,000 on it. And the business got into trouble and they appointed a receiver and they sold it for
$70,000. My God.
So, well, I mean, what I feel would happen is that they would just simply put pressure on her to accept whatever price is given to her.
Just in other
words, like somebody could come along, one of their partners, and I'm not saying this happens, but life is the way it is, and people would come along and say to her someday, well, oh, a friend of mine has that, I'll give you 200 or 150 for it, and the banks would say, oh, you have to accept it or no, and they put pressure on that woman, and the result will be that they'll end up in a worse situation.
But Sheila, you ended up tragically without your business premises.
I did.
She'll end up without a home.
That's right, exactly. Yeah, I was very blessed. I have another house, and I have this house here where I'm living in Rathfarnham. And I started again just as a sole trader, and I have a couple of engineers working with me, and we're doing projects. So we're just making a living again, thank God, which is great. We're blessed, you know, but it's hard out there, you know. Right. But when I hear those things going on with those people, the banks are absolutely treating people abominably. It's terrible.
The banks aren't out there for anybody else. But
no,
fulfil their own bottom line and their own balance sheets. We, the customers, are going to be a secondary issue to them. They don't care how many of us go under as long as they're fine.
Yeah, I had experiences years ago with the banks back in 92. We lost a lot of money as well. And I remember I wouldn't give them a personal guarantee. And they brought me in front of this kind of tribunal of guys, top guys, and they gave me under terrible pressure, say, oh, the world's going to end tomorrow, you have to sign it. And I refused to sign it. There was no way of giving me a personal guarantee.
What was this committee?
No, what happened was I started a business in England as well, expanded into England, and we lost a lot of money in England. And my own business got into a bit of trouble here, and I had an overdraft, and I had never given them the premises as a security.
Yeah.
So I got a loan against the premises, about 50,000 at the time. And what happened was they heard about this and they said, oh, we should have been given that. And so I said, well, look, you didn't ask for it, so it's my premise, I can do what I like. And then I got advice on it before I went into the bank through a friend of mine, Ronnie. Ronnie was great. He was a manager himself. And what we did was I went in and they wanted to give, I had a big house at that stage down in Auchline that I'd built, and they wanted me to give that house as a guarantee. And I told them it was illegal for them to do that because my wife at the time owned half of that.
And are many people on the other side of the table in the bank?
Three of them.
And they told you the world was going to end.
Oh, no, I'm just simply giving that as a
metaphor. Pity they didn't tell themselves. Pity they didn't tell the rest of us. Before they...
No, what I mean by that metaphor, like, they were threatening me with all this terrible doom and gloom and the world is going to end. This is terrible and you have to do this and I have to do that. And I said, I don't have to do anything and I'm not doing it. And they said, fine, then, well, you have an overdraft and don't go over it. And I didn't. So, like, Ben Dunn is right. You've got to take them on and you can.
Okay. Thanks, okay, Tom.
Thanks,
Jerry. Thank you both. 51551 is Marie there. Marie, good afternoon.
Hello, Joe. How are you?
You're listening to Lisa and to Mary. In 2009, what happened? Your husband?
He was made redundant.
Yeah.
And we tried paying our mortgage. And in 2011, we were getting into debt.
Okay.
And that's something I can't cope with. I just don't like owing money.
Yeah.
So we moved back in with my parents and we put the house up for sale. Mm. Now, it was a beautiful house in very good condition and there were quite a few people interested in it. But they couldn't get a loan, Joe.
Yeah.
And in the November... there was a young couple and we had to keep dropping the price and we eventually sold it for what we owed the bank.
Oh, so you paid off the bank?
Yeah. And because we paid the bank earlier than we were supposed to.
Oh, you paid off the mortgage earlier, as such, yeah.
We were fined €12,000.
You were penalised?
Yeah.
And how did you manage to pay that?
We've to pay back €130 a month for the next 10 years.
Ah, for God's sake. So your house is gone.
Yeah.
You gave the bank back the money that you borrowed.
Yeah.
You're back living with your parents.
Yeah.
But you still will be paying the bank for the next 10 years.
The next 10 years, Joe.
And did they not? Did you fight them on that? Say, hang on a minute.
Joe, I wanted to go in and hand back the keys. But the manager of the bank wouldn't talk to us. He would only talk to us through a solicitor.
Mm.
And, of course, that was all money adding up. You know, you had the solicitor fees.
I know.
And you had the estate agent fees.
And by the way, when
they were all adding up.
Yeah, when did you get the loan off the bank?
Wait till I see now.
Well, just generally,
2001.
Yeah, okay. And did the bank look for your solicitor then to come in and ask for the loan? No, they didn't. No, they wanted you to look for it. And so you're when you say you're with your parents, have the two of you children yourselves?
No.
Okay. But you're back with your parents?
Back with my parents.
And what's that like? I'm sure they're lovely people, but...
They are. They are. We get on okay. But I'm not happy having to pay money that I don't think I owe. I won't mention the bank.
No, I don't.
But this bank got quite a lot of help from the state.
Oh, they are, yeah.
And...
they were saved by
still
the state.
Punishing people. For paying their what they owe.
So now you've no house?
No.
And yet for the next 10 years, you've that payment to the bank every month?
Yeah.
So have you a prospect of getting somewhere else of your own?
It doesn't look like it, no. My husband has a job at the moment, but he'll be finished in it next month.
Oh, yeah.
So he'll be unemployed again.
Oh, stay there, Mary. Tom Kilroy is on the line as well. Stay there. Tom, good afternoon.
Yeah, good afternoon, Joe.
What was your situation? You say you overcame the banks, but it was in the 1980s.
That's right. Now, bearing in mind, of course, that the times were totally different, but what happened to me was I bought a licensed premises in the west of Ireland, and I borrowed £18,000, and at the time, the interest rates were 11%. And the business itself was quite good. And we tried to, we were making the repayments. But unfortunately, we got caught up in that exchange mechanism, the European exchange mechanism. And the interest rates started to go up and go up. And therefore, the amount of money that the bank was looking for me doubled because the interest rates went to 22% approximately. And this would be, in or around 1980. And it made life very, very difficult.
And you say you were under terrible pressure and you got letters every day from the bank.
Yeah, the bank were demanding money and it was practically on a day-to-day basis because they would say that the amount of money that was lodged in wasn't enough to meet the either the interest or whatever. Now, my father taught me one thing. He said, don't ever ignore the paperwork from a bank or anything like that. So I got a writing pad and a pen, and on a daily basis I would write back to them, and I'd bring it. Sometimes the letter would say, we need to speak to you urgently. Mm-hmm. So I devised various sort of psychological things. One was that I would call to the bank at 5 to 1 before they went to lunch, or I'd call at 5:20 before they closed. And obviously they didn't want to speak to me on those days, but I got the bank to stamp the letter to say that I had delivered the reply, etc.
And how did you overcome the banks then? How did you beat them?
Well, the other little bit of the psychology was, because the bank only worried about me from Monday to Friday, I only worried about them from Monday to Friday, and I sort of relaxed at the weekend. But we did quite a good business, but it wasn't enough to meet the bank's repayments. So I then, on one day, I thought of the start of the solution. And the start of the solution was I had a very big sort of a shed out at the back of the pub. And I decided that if I could, I would do as much business out there in that shed as I was doing where I was on the street. And I transferred the pub without planning permission. And it cost me some money, but people helped me out, carpenters, electricians, and I paid them on a weekly basis. During that time, I didn't repay the bank. I used the money to transfer the pub out there. The next move was I let out where the pub was, and I got somebody to take it on as a food shop.
So you were getting some income from that. But the point, Ben Dunn's point was you have to clarify things in your mind. You have to try and take the pressure off, the mental pressure off yourself.
That's right.
You agree with that.
And then in our living room, without planning permission, I opened a door onto the street. And I advertised that room for letting, and I got a lady to take it as a flower shop. And even in my little kitchen at the back, I let that out at one stage to a seamstress.
God, you were innovative.
The point was that all of those, when they were coming in, I suddenly started to win, but I didn't get the permission from the bank, and they held the deeds on
you
the
You did
property.
Everything yourself. Okay, stay there. I'm a bit over on breaks. Tom, 51551.
Joe Duffy.
Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815.
Good afternoon, Valerie. How are you?
Hello.
Valerie.
Hi, how are you?
Good. You were listening to Mary earlier on. Unfortunately, Mary's husband died by suicide. The business had gone. There's other issues as well. You say this has also happened to you, unfortunately, and now there's arrears to be dealt with.
There's arrears to be dealt with, yeah, and a huge mortgage.
And was there a life insurance policy, Valerie?
There was, but they didn't. There was a couple of life insurance policies, but none of them paid out.
None of them?
No.
Why not?
Because, number one, because it was a suicide, and also because my husband had been in an addiction centre, in a treatment centre.
And what's the pressure on you like now from the banks?
It's actually worse now than when my husband died, because I suppose you kind of park it for a while and you're grieving, and I've got three children, so I had a lot of other stuff going on. So I started repaying the mortgage. Now it's $1,200 a month, and I'm not making them payments. I don't have the money, but I made two payments, one last month and one the month before, for €400. And there's actually the company are really hounding me since I've made any payments at all. They're constantly on the phone, and when can I pay more? When can I pay more? And just I feel really bullying me constantly. I won't answer the phone to them anymore. I got upset last week when I was on the phone. I had to hang up.
And what do they say to you? Don't say who they are, but what do they say to you, Valerie?
The same stuff all the time. Why haven't you paid up until now? There's 30,000 interest on your mortgage. When can you pay more? Just the same thing all the time. And I have explained to them, because it's a different person you're talking to always. It's never the same person. And I have explained my situation, that I'm a widow, that I'm working up on 70 hours a week, and to try to make ends meet, and really struggling. But they really don't care, It's like you're talking to a robot.
Valerie, would you say to them, my husband died by suicide?
I have said that to one girl. She was so bad on the phone that I explained. I said, this is my situation. And when I told her everything, she said, so when can you make the full payment?
So that just went over her head?
Yeah, yeah.
And did you explain to her you didn't get insurance?
I did, yeah.
Because of the circumstances?
Yeah, I actually thought that, maybe the next time they call me that I would record the phone conversation, because it's that unbelievably. They're so rude, and so they just talk to you like you're a piece of dirt, that you would have to... My friend was here the other day and she was trying to take the phone off me. That's how bad they are. You would have to hear it to believe it.
And what your friend was trying to do, what with the phone? Take it
she
off?
She was trying to take... Because I was getting so upset,
But was she going to engage with the woman at the other end or wherever
she was? She was, yeah. Yeah.
She was going to give her a piece of her mind, I suspect.
She was, yeah.
And is there any relief and prospect, Valerie?
No. It's literally, it's more than, until the day I die, I'll be paying it pretty much.
But you can't go on working 70 hours a week.
I can't, no. My son has just moved away to another country as well. Just last week, and I think with everything that's happening, it just gets too much. You're tired all the time and just can't cope.
Well, at 70 hours a week, you're just living to work.
Yeah, yeah. I'm from work, working 12 hours, nearly 12 hours every day, and then home and bed, and do whatever I have to do with my other two children, and bed, and up again the next day. That's 6 days a week.
And have you investigated avenues of...
I have spoken to NABS. I have gone to the Ombudsman with the life insurance policies to see if there's, any way. But I don't think there is. That's what it was. I didn't actually. I wasn't listening to your show. Somebody said it to me about Ben Dunne, and I seen it in the paper. Somebody kept me the paper. And I thought, I'd do that. I'd do anything at this stage. I'd do anything.
You'd leave for a year to try and...
I would, I would.
Okay, you've obviously got good friends as well, Valerie.
I have and I've got a great family.
Okay, well done. Thanks, Valerie. Thanks indeed.
Okay, thank you.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.